okay, what's going on?
AudioToYou.com.
The home of quality podcasts.
Stay tuned to this channel.
Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Shelton Muller.
Hi, and welcome to episode 145 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com, and with me on the line once again via Skype from Melbourne, Mr. Shelton Muller. How are you?
G'day, Bruce. Pretty good, mate. Pretty darn good. How about yourself?
Excellent. Thank you.
That's good. That's good. Now, should we begin this podcast with you just breaking the news, because I know you want to get this out of your system, and so would I if I were you. I remember what it's like. Come on. Tell the world.
Okay. All right. Okay. Little bit of the backstory for those who haven't picked it up on Facebook or 5 Minute Photographer. Back in July...
That's www.5minutephotographer.com. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt there.
Of course not. Back in July of last year, Kath and Max and I went down to this little place on the south coast of New South Wales called Tabowry Lake for a week-long holiday. And while I was there, I shot this panorama of the sunrise, which came out really well. It was... I just pulled it off really well. It was a spectacular morning for a sunrise. And anyway, I ended up getting this canvas produced that's 150 centimeters long and 30 centimeters high. And for about 3 months, I had it in my studio at work. And every single person, and I'm, you know, not blowing wind up my own skirt here, but every single person who saw it went, "Wow, that's awesome."
Awesome. It was a beautiful photograph.
Thank you. But no offers to purchase it, or at least not at the money I was asking. Anyway, around about 6 weeks ago, I thought, bugger this, I'm going to go and put it in an art gallery somewhere. So went to an art gallery just up the road from where I live, told them all about it, said, "I've got it out in the car, can I bring it in and show you?" They said, "Yeah." So I took it inside and I said, "Look, would you put this in your gallery on consignment?" They said, "Yep, no worries, we'll do that." They said, "Look, just be aware that in the current market, things like art just aren't moving." I said, "Okay, fair enough." They said, "You know, it might be sitting here for a long time." So I said, "Okay, that's cool." Anyway, this weekend just gone, Kath, Max and I were going to head down to Tabowry Lake again. So on Wednesday night of last week, I went round to see Simo, the guy who owns the house.
Simo, now there's an ugly name if ever I heard one. Simo, mate. Was Robbo there?
No.
No?
No.
He must have been having a beer with Tomo then.
Or Davo.
Yeah. No, Davo, yeah. That's Steve-o.
So anyway, so I've gone round to Simo's to pick up the keys. And I got talking to him and I said, "Oh, you wouldn't have seen the panorama that I shot." And I explained all about it. And I said, I've got this canvas. And I said, "It's up in an art gallery in Castle Hill, you know, with a $700 price tag on it." And he said, "Oh, mate, that's awesome." And I said, "Yeah, it is." So anyway, he said, "Oh, we'll have to go and check it out." So anyway, we went down to the coast for the weekend. And Simo had said to me on Wednesday night, as I was picking up the keys, that he and his wife, Helena, were heading down there Sunday afternoon as we would have been leaving. So Sunday morning, as we're packing up the car to come back to Sydney, I rang him and I said, "Oh, mate, did you want me to leave the electricity switched on and all that sort of stuff so everything's ready when you get here?" And he said, "Yeah, that'd be great." He said, "Hey, listen, Helena and one of her girlfriends went up to that art gallery on Thursday to check out your print. And he said, "It's got a sold sticker on it." And I said, "You're kidding." And he said, "No." And I went, "Oh, man, that is just so awesome." So I rang the gallery this morning and I said, "You know, I understand you've sold my print." And they said, "Well, technically not sold yet. A person has come in and put it on lay-by. Or in America, I think they refer to that as layaway.
Yes.
So basically it means that someone's put a deposit down on it and plans to pay off the remainder in installments, and when they've paid the entire sum, they then get to take it home. So I'm really excited to have sold my first large print.
It's a really cool thing, isn't it? When someone appreciates your art enough to sort of throw money at it and buy it, it's really cool.
Absolutely.
Congratulations, mate. You deserve it. It's a beautiful photograph.
Thank you. Yeah.
But it really is a wonderful feeling. I was just reading a Facebook update with Rebecca Dunstall, who's you'd know, and he's on 5 Minute Photographer. She's been to some workshops and things like that. And she was just saying that she received an email, you know, where the person said that her photos of the, you know, brought her to tears and, you know, that kind of thing. They were so beautiful. And I just commented on her Facebook. I said, now that is the real reward of photography. And it's not, I mean, in your case, it was not, it's not just the money, but that somebody loves it enough.
Yeah.
You know, invest their hard-earned cash in acquiring it.
Yes.
And that is a great reward, you know. It really is.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I feel for you, mate. Congratulations.
Thank you. That is
the way of it, you know. And I'm sure that many of our listeners have experienced the same thing.
Yeah.
And it makes you just want to stay doing it, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
You know, it really is.
Yep.
It's really great. You know, the earning of the money is the hard part. But it's, you know, and takes a while to get, you know, that little roller coaster going. But something like this is enough to keep passion, you know, fired up, which is really great.
Absolutely.
So what's the next project then, Bruce?
Well,
what are you going to do with the money that you earn from this print?
Well, when that money comes through, well, I'm sort of tempted to just spend the money before I've earned it. But it will be to print another two large canvases like that.
Mm-hmm.
Which will probably be another one of the Tabari Sunrise and one of the Circular Quay panorama that I did, because I just know that that image would move very quickly.
Cool.
Particularly in Sydney.
Yes.
So, I'm thinking that's the way I'll go, you know. And the way I sold this print was it was hand autographed by me.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it was hand numbered as number 2 of 100.
Mm-hmm.
Number 1 doesn't exist. That'll be the one that I print for myself and hang in my own space.
Right. we won't tell anybody though.
That will always be the case. Number 1 will always be mine.
Of course.
And I sold it with a letter of authenticity saying, you know, that this is number 2 of 100, you know, limited edition canvas prints of this image, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. So the person who's bought it at least gets to feel like they are investing in something that is genuinely going to be in a limited quantity. And mm-hmm. that is what I will do, you know, with the Sydney Circular Quay one as well. Yeah. Same sort of deal.
Now, where did you what research did you do to come up with this MO, this modus operandum of yours to, you know, to give a letter of authenticity, to hand sign it, to hand number it, etc.? What made you do that?
That came about because my first wife and I purchased a limited edition print of a painting.
Mm-hmm.
And it was much the same deal. You know, we paid about $5,000 for this painting. Or,
wow.
Sorry, this print, yeah. I mean, it's very large.
Mm.
It's framed. I guess the frame would be probably 4 feet by 3 feet.
Right.
Actually, no, I'd go so far as to say it's probably about 5 feet by 4 feet.
Mm.
It is big. And we paid about $5,000 for that print, probably at a time when it was, you know, at its peak in value, because it was called Celebrate Sydney and it was prior to the Olympic Games.
Right.
It was by a guy called Charles Billich.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know if you're familiar with Charles Billich, but he's I think he's Spanish born, but he lives here in Australia, and he does these very modernistic, stylized type paintings, and he is regularly commissioned to do the works for the host Olympic city, and he, you know, he just has a unique style. And my first wife and I, we saw this print and we went, wow, we really like that. We bought it. And that was the whole deal, that it was numbered as, I think ours was number 453 of 500.
Right.
And again, it came with a letter of authenticity that, you know, sort of outlined what it was, you know, and the fact that there were only 500 of these high quality fine art prints made from the original painting. And that kind of thing. And I figured, well, that seems like a reasonable way to go with it. So
yeah.
I guess that was the sum total of my research.
And fair enough, but it worked. It worked.
Yeah.
And something, of course, I suppose you'd want to suggest to any one of our listeners who is going to sell their art, you know, to make it original, to make it worth buying, And we'd actually be very interesting to hear from our listeners as to who among them have had exhibitions and have sold art, you know, off the wall, as it were.
Yeah.
Because I have never done an exhibition.
Right.
And never sold art, unless, of course, someone who knows me says, oh, you know that photo you took in Patagonia or whatever?
Yeah.
I've had that happen a couple of times and made very large prints for them. But I've never, you know, I've never actually had an exhibition, despite being encouraged to do so many times.
Right.
But, you know, I just haven't done it yet because it's not what I do, I suppose, but I'd love to. I'd love to. So I'll have to take a leaf out of your book, you know?
That'll be the day.
No. You can never stop learning, and you always learn from the most interesting people, you know? You should never put yourself in a, you know, and I know you're not. I know you're not, you know, but I think photographers stop learning when they really put too many tickets on themselves.
Right.
You know, I've learned from... You know, I've learned interesting techniques and visions from people who are very, very new,
yeah,
you know,
right.
to photography. So, absolutely, don't, you know, always keep yourself open, keep yourself, you know,
yep.
humble. Otherwise, you stop, don't you, mate?
Oh, absolutely. You know? After 20 odd years, I still love learning new things about audio.
Yeah.
You know,
have you ever been in a situation where somebody rather new to audio has taught you an interesting new way of, you know, looking at something?
Nothing springs immediately to mind, but I have, even in the last 12 months, had my ears opened to a completely, I won't say a new tech, or I suppose it is a new technique, but a technique that completely flew in the face of everything I thought I understood about dynamics,
right.
which in audio recording and mixing is a massive part of the discipline.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, somebody, admittedly whom I respect very highly, wrote in his magazine column about this alternative technique to approaching dynamics. And, you know, on one hand, you kind of think, well, that's crap. That completely flies in the face of what I know.
Mm-hmm.
But then you stop and think, well, hang on. This guy is somebody whom I respect, and he has way more runs on the board than I do, and I'm pretty certain he knows what he's talking about, so maybe I need to investigate. So I did. I went off and I tried his technique and went, well, what do you know?
Yeah.
You learn something every day.
Yeah.
Well, you can if you're at least open to it, you know?
Well, exactly, and that's the point.
Yeah.
You know? That really is the point. So that is... something I've been seeing, especially with people who have come straight into digital. You'd think that having a film background, which is what, of course, I do, and you
yes.
do,
yep.
You'd think, well, you know, I have a serious advantage. But there's an interesting advantage to those who think digitally, and that is that they don't think in film.
Right.
So, you know, for them, their vision and their way of handling or processing or approaching an image is completely different. So,
yep.
you know, I keep my ears and eyes open all the time. Oh, I really do, you know. And that was something that I learned. It wasn't our interview with Joe interesting.
Oh, absolutely.
You know,
we got to get him back on sometime.
I'd love to do that. Love to do that. Well, I'm going to be in the U.S. in mid-February, so we're going to be meeting up with David Hobby and David Honnell and a few others, Glenn and I. So I'll see what I can do to round up a few extra guests for future episodes of Shutters, Inc.
Fantastic.
The only problem, of course, being that if they're as popular as Joe was, our servers are going to crash.
Yes, that's been the bane of my week, people. I've had no end of emails from people going, why can't I download the Joe McNally episode of Shutters, Inc.? And just to explain what happens with your hosting package, like, you know, my site, audio2.com, is hosted with a particular company. They're based in Canada. Those who've been listening long enough will remember that about 4 years ago, I was hosted with a company in Perth here in Australia, and they rang me up on the anniversary of my hosting package, and they said, you are way over your quota for storage and your bandwidth for, you know, monthly traffic. And at the time, I was paying $140 a year Australian for this hosting package. And the guy said to me, if we were to start charging you what we should be charging you based on the traffic you're driving, we should be charging you $1,400 a month, not a year, a month. And so they said to me, look, you know, your site's grown really well. You really need to move it to the US. So I moved to this crowd who are based in Canada. And unfortunately, it's starting to look like I'm outgrowing them. And because what happened with the Joe McNally interview was everybody knew it was coming. You know, we'd let the cat out of the bag. And in a regular weekly cycle, what happens is most people just wait for, you know, iTunes or whatever podcast catcher they're using to just grab the file as it can. But I think what happened this week, last week, was that because everyone knew it was coming and everyone was really excited about Joe McNally, everyone went to, you know, audio2u.com to grab the file manually. And so we completely overloaded the server with people were trying to download it and they were getting this concurrent connection quota exceeded, and basically meant that too many people trying to grab the one file at one time.
Sorry about that, folks.
These things happen.
It's so nice to be popular.
Absolutely. So if you
it wasn't exactly us that was popular, really, was it?
Well, kind of, yeah. So if you haven't got it yet, please just keep trying. I'm sure that, you know, probably by now, as we're recording this, I think the load has started to ease, and I think most people have now got the file. But if you have had a bad experience trying to download episode 144, give it another crack now, because by now the demand should have dwindled and it shouldn't be a problem. So my sincerest apologies for the inconvenience to anybody who was struggling to get the file.
We did have some great comments about the interview, and I must admit I thoroughly enjoyed doing it.
Yeah, people loved it.
Yeah. Joe was very open. He didn't sort of keep anything too close to his chest. He, you know, answered every question honestly, candidly, with humility, I thought, which was excellent. And it was nice to hear him talking, a man of his experience, talking about going to workshops where the discipline in photography is so completely different to what he does.
Yeah.
You know, for instance, he went to do the Jay Mazel workshop. Yeah. And the shooting style between Joe McNally and Jay Mazel is planets apart.
Right.
And yet, you know, he wanted to go and see Jay Mazel and do that workshop. And I thought, wow, that's a man who's really trying to expand his vision, not just settling for the fact that he's a renowned photographer, but, you know, and this is where I was, you know, thinking.
And that's the thing,
before,
you know, when you are a Joe McNally, it would be so easy to rest on your laurels.
Yeah. Yeah.
To say, hey, I am the Joe McNally. You know, I'm the man of 50 speed lights, you know?
Yeah, and yet there's a part of him that says, you know, I'm sick of doing the same thing, maybe, or I want to just expand that a little bit.
Yeah.
And that's the lifelong passion that we have with light, I suppose. And, you know, good on him for being that candid. I really appreciated that with him.
Yep.
And he was so easy to talk to. I'm hoping we get the chance again. I'm hoping I get a chance to actually shake his hand in PMA in the States and say, hey, thanks, Joe.
I assume you've dropped him an email to say you're going over there.
I actually haven't.
Well, you should. But
I think, actually, Glyn has.
Right, cool.
So, yes, Glyn has. So, you know, he'll know. We'll catch up with him, I hope.
Now,
we're going to be doing a shoot probably in, I think it's David Honnell's studio.
Wow.
There's a few good things cool that are going on there, but I'd like to meet Joe and shake his hand in person and say, hey, thanks. And speaking of Joe, by the way, did you get a chance to watch his YouTube video, Joe McNally's Confessions with Father Chris?
I did.
If Father you Bob. Are listening and you know, you haven't actually gone to that YouTube video, do it, because it's a humorous. There's two photographers, of course, Bob Christ and Joe McNally, and Joe McNally goes to see the good Father Christ. I like the fact that he's put on the accent and everything, and he's talking about the fact that he bless me Father, for I've sinned, and he goes into the entire spiel of the things that he's done wrong as a photographer. And then of course the good Father Bob Christ, good Father Bob, comes back with, oh, you haven't done this, my son, have you? You haven't done this. And I tell you what, as funny as this video is, it is jam-packed with brilliant, brief little photography, little raw nudges, reminders, pokes, lessons, you know, in our digital era that are well worth taking to heart. So make sure that you catch up with Joe and Bob in that little video. It's called Joe McNally's Confessions with Father Christ.
I'll put a link to it in the show notes, so if you couldn't be bothered searching for it.
It really is very, very cool. Now you had a question you wanted to raise about lenses.
Yes, Bruce. Because I've got a camera with a 35mm sensor, I started thinking to myself, is the collection of lenses that I own the right collection of lenses to continue using?
Mm-hmm.
Because I, and to be honest, I'm still not to the bottom of the question as to the lenses that I've got, which ones are designed for an APS-C size sensor and which ones are designed for a 35mm sensor.
Yeah.
Obviously, my old prime lenses, like my 50 f1.7 and my 135 f2.8, they both date from the days of film. So I know that they are, you know, those focal lengths on a 35mm film plane / digital sensor.
Yep.
But amongst the other lenses that I have a Konica Minolta 18-70, which I bought aftermarket for my 7D, which I think... that's 18-70mm on APS-C.
Yes, that's correct.
I have also two kit lenses which came with the 7D. One is a 28-100, which I'm fairly certain is an APS-C lens. And
you'd probably find it'd work on yours. If it's 28-100, then you will probably find that it actually is more designed for your new size sensor, your 35mm size sensor, than an APS-C. Yep, absolutely.
So why would they have shipped that with a 7D then?
That's a very good question.
Okay.
And then, I wish I had an answer, but I'll give you the credit for actually asking me a very good question.
And then the other one is the 75-300.
Which, again, would be fine with your new baby.
Right. Now, the funny thing is, was once I actually started this line of, you know, internal inquiry as to the suitability of the lenses that I've got, I suddenly thought to myself, hang on, what is attached to my 700 SI, which is still sitting up in the cupboard?
Oh, really?
Which hasn't seen the light of day in 10 years. So I go and dig the 700 SI out of the cupboard, and what do I find attached to it but a Tamron 28-200, 3.5-5.6 zoom, which is a lovely, lovely lens.
Yes.
And
they weren't bad. They actually, I took one to China in 1999.
Right.
And I was amazed by the thing. I really was.
Yeah. Well, mine's had virtually no use. You know, because I got it after my after the break-in at my unit in Dundas, which way predates podcasting, when I had a 7000i and that got stolen and everything that I had with it, and the my first 135 f2.8. After I got the insurance payout, that's when I ended up with this Tamron 28-200.
Yep.
And so, you know, when I was running around with the 7D, as I have been for the last 4 years, the 18-70 was pretty much my everyday lens. And once I got my hands on the Alpha 850, I thought, if that 18-70 is designed for an APS-C sensor, which I've now proven it is, then it's not the best lens to be using as an everyday lens, because at its widest angle, and we asked this question last week and I said I hadn't actually tested it. Well, I have now. And yes, my 850, if I put that 18-70mm lens on there and open it out to 18mm, the Alpha 850 will automatically crop it.
Aha, right.
So I get the same image but in lower resolution by using that 18mm lens as I do when I put the Tamron 28-200 on at 28mm.
Well, you're going to have to do a test, aren't you? you're going to have to test to see which one actually produces a better image, because the 18-70 might be a better lens, but you're using fewer pixels.
Oh, okay.
Mind you.
So you're just saying you're talking about quality of optics.
You're talking about using fewer pixels, you're still probably going to get 12 megapixels out of the thing.
Yes.
Wouldn't you?
Yes.
So, I mean, I get that out of my D700 at full.
Actually, it wouldn't be a half. It'd be two-thirds. So it'd be around about 18 megapixels.
Okay. Well, there you go. So, you know, that's not too bad.
Hmm.
You'll have to do a test on that. It would be interesting. Okay. And I'm sure our listeners would agree to see what you come up with. And you may actually get better.
16 megapixels. Yeah. Right. Sorry.
You may get something better out of that than you would out of using, you know, it at its full frame.
With the Tamron lens.
200 Tamron, because that's an older lens designed for film, blah, blah, blah. I tell you what, why don't you set the camera up on a tripod and do a shoot?
Okay. All right,
using
I will do
exactly
that.
The same conditions and see what you come up with.
I will do that. Mm. But it leads on to my next question.
Right.
Which is where this whole line of internal inquiry was headed, was, you know, if the collection of lenses that I have is not the optimal set of lenses to own, what is it I'd really want to have?
Mm.
And I basically, you know, I guess having listened to you and having listened to other photographers and knowing what, you know, other people, you know, tend to use for weddings, sort of figured, well, probably a 28-70 2.8 and a 70-2.
And the Sony lens is a killer.
Is it?
Apparently, yes.
And then a 70-200 2.8.
And there'd be very little you wouldn't actually be able to get with just those two lenses.
And that's exactly my thinking. And so then I was thinking, well, first of all, I looked at what I would get for selling the lenses that I've got, and it's pretty much bugger all. I wouldn't get much for them at all, with the exception of the 135 f2.8. That would actually bring some money back to me because it's such a great lens.
Yeah, but you're not going to sell that, are you?
Well, here's the thing. If you've got a 70-200 2.8, you've got 135 2.8 in that lens.
Yeah, I suppose.
So when would... And this was my next question was, if you had, you know, a 70-200 2.8, would you ever use a 135 2.8 prime again?
Yes.
For what?
You're asking me, remember? Mr. I love my primes.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So why? Is it something to do with the number of blades in there or the number of elements in there?
It is designed for that purpose. You know, it is. Yes, it is. It would probably have a nicer bokeh, or bokeh, or you know, yep. Bokeh. Got a bokeh, nice bokeh.
Yep.
It would probably, be sharper at 135 2.8. Although I tell you what, these days it's hard to know.
Right.
So I'll leave that out. I'll just leave that sitting out there. It's smaller and lighter than schlepping around a 70-200 2.8.
But you're never gonna walk out the door with your 135 2.8 and leave a 70-200 2.8 at home.
No. But if you are set up for a shot, then and you know that your 135 is the focal length you want to use, I know which lens I'd rather have. But again, I'd probably want to, you know, if your 135 is older and designed for film and your new one is designed for digital, there are different optical differences that, you know, do make the difference. It'd be interesting to see what the tests came up with when you compared your old prime with your new zoom. I would find that very, very interesting.
Right.
But, you know, I'm a guy who loves working with a prime lens. I really do. I find a prime lens, like, as I've often said, an old pair of slippers. You know, there they are, your feet go in and you go, yes, that's what I was expecting. And that's why I love a prime lens. It's also smaller, lighter, easier to maneuver. It keeps you in that same place all the time. If you know that's the way you're going to see the shot, then, you know, you've got that level of consistency. I don't know. I wouldn't get rid of it if I were you. Okay. I really wouldn't. It probably is the next lens that I want to get is a 135 2.8 prime.
Right.
The Nikkor. Yeah, absolutely. Just because as much as I love my 85, I must admit that since I got the D700, it's a little shorter than when I loved it with my previous APS size.
Yeah, right.
I'd still go out. I mean, if anything happened to my 85, I would just go out and buy another one. But I wouldn't mind having something between my 85 and my 180. And here's the other thing. While I do have you know, a Zoom, a 2.8 Zoom. I also have a 180 2.8 prime.
Right.
And if the thing wasn't actually back focusing at the moment, which it is, and I'll have to get it repaired, yeah. I'd use it a hell of a lot more.
Yeah.
So look, I wouldn't get rid of your 135 2.8. I think you'll find that you'll come into situations, you know, like indeed we've been on at workshops, when you've come to my workshops, where you stand in a certain place,
yeah.
you've got the shot in your head, and you just know that when your 135 goes on, there it is, this nice little optical piece of package that's just, you know, designed for this shot.
Right.
You know, and it's your, you know, it's the tool for the trade. It's,
yeah.
you know, it's like you would have specific microphones for specific jobs.
Oh,
now, you could
definitely.
Say, you could say, look, an SM58 will do everything. Yeah, it will, but not as well as
yeah.
a specific mic for a specific job.
Definitely.
I don't know. Maybe my analogy is bad, but
No, you're spot on.
You know?
Yeah.
I think that's why you should keep it. However, I would encourage you to do a test, because you may find that a new Zoom is better than an old Prime. But that's just me asking a big question. I couldn't really tell you either way.
Right. Well, it kind of negates the next question, which was about the 50 f1.7.
Okay, well, what's the question?
Well, it's basically the same thing, is if you had a 28 to 70 that opened to 2.8, how often, you know, if you had 50 mil f2.8 within that zoom, how often would you take that zoom off just to put on a 50 mil f1.7?
Some people are in love with their 50 mils. Now, I have a 50 mil and I don't use it all that often. But I must admit, for the $100 I'd get for it if I sold it, I would. There's no way on God's green earth I'd sell it.
Yeah.
It's just a little Nikon plastic, fantastic 50mm 1.8.
Yeah.
But when I need it, it's there, you know, and it is 1.8. And if I had to walk into, you know, somewhere where I was, where I needed lots of light, you know, maybe I'm, I don't know, perhaps shooting backstage somewhere and I can't use flash, or maybe even shoot, I'm up front, you know, shooting a gig and I need a, you know, a good fast lens. I don't know, just talking off the top of my head.
Or even in a church for a wedding where the
yeah.
you know, the minister doesn't want flash.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And a 51.8, you know, it's just, if you've got a little jacket on, a 51.8 just slips into your pocket and you hardly know it's there.
Yeah.
But, you know, you just zip it out, bang, put it on, and it's there, you know. And because on your size, on your camera and on mine, it's got that sort of similarly, it's got that almost human perspective. It doesn't zoom. It doesn't, you know, push
yes.
away. It's
very,
almost
very one-to-one.
Sort of,
yeah.
Sort of a similar magnification to the human eye. It does have that advantage. So I would keep it again.
Okay.
You know? Yeah, it's just the, you know, and I'd love to get the thoughts of our listeners on this front.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not one to use my 50 mil all the time, but don't ask me to give it to you because, well, A, it won't fit your camera, and B, I want to hold on to it.
Yeah.
You know?
Now,
I mean,
my final question was essentially about third-party manufacturers.
Mm-hmm.
Because as much, you know, as I'm happy with the Sony system, by God, do they get you on lenses?
Oh, they're expensive. They're even more expensive than the Canon and the Nikkor in this country.
They're shocking.
Yeah.
You know, even the 16, is it the 16 to 70 f2.8? You know, now that's not an extreme focal range.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not what you'd classify as a super zoom.
No.
Is $1,899.
Hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
So I've been looking and thinking about, you know, I think both Sigma and Tamron both have, you know, these fast zooms, these, you know, constant 2.8 zooms.
Yes.
How would they compare to the Carl Zeiss stuff?
I haven't actually looked. The Carl Zeiss lenses are superb.
Right.
They really are. They always have been. So you would probably find that a test would reveal that they're inferior.
Okay.
But I think there are degrees of superiority and degrees of inferiority that matter.
Yep.
And then there are degrees of superiority and inferiority that, you know,
don't
matter when you compare other things, like the fact that you're not a millionaire.
Yep.
You know? Well, you might be. Not that I know of.
No, I'm not.
You'd be paying me to do this podcast.
That's
you
right.
Yeah. You know? I think that I mean, I use and own both Nikon and other third-party lenses, and I have been so seriously impressed with other lenses from other manufacturers that, you know, I haven't even bothered to say, well, how does it compare to the Nikon?
Right.
Because there's a certain sort of mindset that you can get yourself into that gets a little carried away, a little ridiculous. It's almost like we were talking about a few weeks ago whereby, oh, if the white's flashing, that's a bad photo. You know, we get too caught up in things and we forget that, you know, everything is awesome. I mean, everything is awesome. I was watching this sketch on, I think it's even on YouTube, of this fellow who's being interviewed by Jay Leno. And I think it's called Everything is Awesome, But Nobody's Happy.
Right.
And he talks about the fact that, you know, we're living in a world where, you know, we can sit in a lounge chair and we can hurtle through space at 1,000 kilometers an hour and get to the other side of the country we're living on in a matter of hours, where it used to take 3 years. It now takes 3 hours.
Yep.
And we complain because it doesn't have internet access on the plane. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah.
We forget just how good things are.
Yes.
And we lose track of where we are. We're always looking at what it could be. Now, that's okay if you've got the money to justify buying those lenses, but not everybody does, and it gets them down. But if you're a lens manufacturer like Tamron or Sigma or Takina, and you make a crap lens, it's going to be all over the internet like a rash these days.
Yeah, well, that's true.
So you can't afford that. You really can't afford to make anything that's just garbage. And if you do, be prepared for the consequences.
Yeah.
So while there are nuances of difference, they may not be enough to disappoint you in the final print, in the final image, to the degree whereby you would say, oh, well, that's just terrible. I've got to throw that away and spend an extra $1,000 on the name lens.
Yeah.
You know? And I've known of third-party name lenses that actually outperform their equivalents in, you know, in the actual brand.
Wow.
So, you know, and there's been some dogs of lenses. I mean, the Nikon 24-120 got terrible reviews. I know some photographers who love it, but it got shocking reviews. And I've used for years, I don't now, but until recently, I used an old Takina 28-70, 2.6 to 2.8. And I loved it. Damn, that thing was sharp.
Yeah.
You know? So I think it's a horses for courses thing. I would certainly look at the lenses of other manufacturers because and even go to, you know, lens review sites and see what they say.
Yeah.
I don't think that you would find that there would be enough difference for you to seriously concern yourself. But being a landscape photographer, the one thing that I probably would invest in if I were you would be a nice prime, like a 20.
Right.
Or a 24.
Yep.
For a landscape, you know, for a landscape shooter, those two lenses are beautiful bits of glass. And like we were saying before about the 135, they're the piece of glass that you pick up and you go, I know exactly how this sees when I put it on my camera.
Yep.
And the picture that I see in my head at the moment, I require this lens for.
Right.
And you get yourself into that zone and it just becomes such an easy pre-visualization to print process that, you know, makes the prime worth having.
Right. Yeah, okay. Interesting. I must admit, I'm looking forward to the Sydney photographers get together Tuesday week.
Excellent.
Because Angie King, who's coming along, is shooting with an Alpha 900 and she has the Sigma 70-200 2.8.
Okay.
And she said that she will bring it along and that I'm welcome to have a play with it. So I'm looking forward to that. So
they are actually a very good lens.
Are they?
I know people who own them and they are seen images from them and they are a very good lens. Yep.
Well, maybe I should get you to pick one up in the States for me.
We won't tell anybody. Yes, I'll see what I can do, mate. No, they get excellent reviews.
Yeah, right.
Yep.
Cool.
Yep. Excellent reviews. So I would definitely give it a try. And you know, if you like it, buy it.
Yeah.
You know, really, because the differences between that and the Sony equivalent, well, you know, may not be enough for you to actually
Well, when you consider that there's, you know, probably a grand to $1,200 difference between them.
Yeah.
You know, you want to be seeing a hell of a lot of difference in quality between them to justify that sort of money.
And, you know, you'd probably want to be working to get that money back.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, but no, the Sigma is actually a very good lens. They do make good lenses. I've often complained about the construction of the Sigmas, but I think the newer ones are better than some of the ones a few years ago.
Okay.
Glass-wise, actually, they get a pretty good rap.
Right.
So you'll find out, and maybe this is something we can talk about in episode 146, how did you go, you know,
with
the Sigma 70 to 200 and also the other test that you're going to, well, we got some work cut out for you this coming. Yeah. I'm just going to sit around on my backside while you're doing all the hard work.
Yeah.
Well, you're the man with a new camera. So,
that's it.
You know, on all the questions. I've sorted myself out, but you're the man with all the questions.
That's right.
So, no, it would be interesting to see. So, you've got a what's happening at the meetup?
Well, I was talking to the 20 or 21-year-old daughter of a friend of ours on Facebook the other night, and I said, hey, have you got any friends who have aspirations to be models? Mm-hmm. And she said, oh, yeah, a few. She said, are you looking for other options for your photography career? And I said, well, as it happens, I've organized this, you know, photographer's get-together for Tuesday the 2nd. Told her where and when and whatnot. And I said, you know, if you would be interested in passing my name and number along to anyone whom you think might be interested in getting some shots for a portfolio... and get them to get in touch with me, and then I'll just, you know, take it from there. So she said, yeah, great, can I get some more business cards off you? Because I'd already given her a few. And I said, yeah, no worries, I'll drop some more around. And so I've dropped off some more business cards to her. So hopefully she'll get some of her girlfriends to give me a call, and we'll be able to line up a model or two. So we'll at least have, you know, some models to work with. And
the location?
Is
something cool like the Opera House or under the bridge?
No. We're actually just Parramatta, but down by the riverside. It's sort of reasonably well lit along. There's like a walkway along the side of the river. It's kind of a little bit like the area beside Crown Casino.
Okay.
You know, that sort of walkway along the side of the river there. Yeah, for those who know Melbourne. So that's we're just going to meet up. I mean, this is only our first one, so...
And excellent, too. Make it your first of many.
That's it, absolutely.
Because don't get much of a chance to shoot with other photographers, do you, Bruce?
No. I've not heard that many Shutters Inc. listeners in Sydney, you know, coming out of the woodwork, so... but I think we're up to about 9 or 10 attendees now, so...
Cool.
That's good. That's a good start.
Oh, that'll be excellent.
And
that'll be excellent.
We're going to try and do it monthly, so, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, we do that down in Melbourne, and, you know, it really is quite cool. It really is, you know, great to just go out and shoot with other photographers. You haven't had that opportunity that much.
No.
We've often talked about it here on Shutters Inc., you know, the need to, well, gather with birds of a feather.
Yep.
And flock together with them. I think that really is going to be a big help to you and keep the passion going, you know?
Absolutely.
Great to do things with friends and make new friends in the process. I must admit, in the past year or so, particularly as a result of, you know, Shutters Inc., 5MinutePhotographer.com and our creative photo workshops business, there's a community of people around me that I've really, really enjoyed having.
Yeah.
You know, wonderful, wonderful people. And you all know who you are. Because I'm talking about you right now with the greatest of affection. And it's wonderful to get together and just do things with these people. On the 23rd, on Saturday the 23rd, we're heading up to Benalla from Melbourne, which is a little country sort of town. And we're photographing in an old age care home.
Oh, okay.
An aged care home. And we're just doing some portraits of the elderly, you know, people there and spending the day with them. And it's just something that we want to do together. So we've hired a 12-seater van, and we're just driving up together. We're just going to giggle ourselves up there, giggle ourselves back, and giggle ourselves with the old people there as well. And I'm really looking forward to it, you know, in terms of what we're going to be able to do for the older people there, make them, you know, have a visit with them, photograph them, have a laugh with them. And they're all excited that we're coming up. they're really excited that we're coming up. So, you know, Kerry Sumner organized it. Good on you, Kerry.
Excellent.
And you know, we're really excited to be going as well. So, you know, that kind of thing is what – it's not just the images that make your photography, you know, worth doing. It's all the other stuff that comes with it. And I reckon you're going to really enjoy this meetup. You're going to benefit from it in ways that you hadn't quite predicted, I'd say.
Cool.
I hope so. Now, I really do.
You've got to pass on one message for me, okay?
Yes.
When you go to Benalla.
All right, yeah.
Right, you've got to tell Tash not too much excessive flashing of the puppies because we don't want heart attacks.
Tash is actually going.
Oh, isn't she?
No, she can't. Okay. She can't make it. So, we don't want blokes going, ah! You know, yes. Mercy, Tash. Excellent. Mercy. Well, but I'll let her know that you said that. Yeah. No problem. Probably a good thing she can't make it, actually. We wouldn't want that kind of being, you know, photography group responsible for multiple killings at local aged care center. Yeah. Death by puppy.
Fantastic.
I'll tell you said that. I have a message to pass on to you from Mike Holman.
Oh, okay.
You're coming to New Zealand.
Oh, am I?
That's what he said. Of course, by that, he's referring to the tour that we have going.
I know what he's referring to, yeah.
.com. Yeah, I know you do. I'm making a plug.
Right.
Yeah. I'm using the podcast to plug the workshop, okay?
Of course.
All right. Okay. Yes, we are going to New Zealand at the end of April. So anybody who wants to come along for that awesome, awesome week of photography, just go to our creativephotoworkshops.com.au website. And, of course, our Bhutan trip is also announced on that website as well.
Oh, so Bhutan. Where's Bhutan? That's Indonesia, isn't it?
No. Bhutan is nestled in the Himalayas.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yeah. Lovely little, you know, nestling up in the Himalayas, just sort of a little to the left of China and Tibet, above Tibet, I think, somewhere up through there.
Wow.
It's this tiny little kingdom, a Buddhist kingdom, where all sorts of you've got the Himalayas, you've got the Buddhist culture, this ancient kingdom, and apparently, and I haven't heard to the contrary yet, it is part of the constitution that you must be happy. It's a serious.
Awesome.
I'm actually serious. And so, you know, it's a great place to visit. I know of a woman who came on a photo tour with me a few years ago who's traveled to 92 countries.
Wow.
I've only been to 25, but this lady's been to 92. And she said that of all the 92, there would be one country that she would love to return to, and that is Bhutan.
Wow.
So you can imagine and she's a photographer. Yeah. So you can imagine what awaits you there. I'm really, really looking forward to this tour.
Wow. So when are you going there?
That's the end of August.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's going to be really, really cool. So we've announced that up on the creativephotoworkshops.com.au website, and along with, of course, our New Zealand trip. So, yes, Bruce, apparently you are coming, Mike, to New Zealand.
Right.
It'd be great to have you, mate, but, you know. Mate, look, yeah. We'll give you a special prize. Don't worry.
I know you will.
A special deal. Yes, if you'd like to come along and have some madness, and, you know, by the way, if it lures you, Natasha, with the, you know, with reference to the tash that Bruce just made, is coming. So, you know, to New Zealand. So don't rush me all over. Okay, something like that. But yes, she'll be sort of tutor/model. During the course of that week there in New Zealand too. So it'll be a really cool trip. Really, really cool trip. I hope you can come, Bruce. But,
so do
you know,
I.
We'll see what we can do.
Yeah.
But Mike, you're coming, so apparently there's no further correspondence shall be entered into.
Excellent. All right, mate. Well, thank you very much for another 48 minutes of hilarity.
Oh, we talked about lenses.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, we did get serious eventually.
Yeah. That's it. All right, mate. Well, thank you for that.
No worries.
And we'll talk with you again next week.
Pleasure. Talk to you soon.
See you, mate.
Bye.
This has been another AudioToYou.com podcast. For previous episodes, check out
ShuttersInPodcast.com.
please send questions, comments, or feedback to studio@audiotou.com.